Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families across the country to unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome. This week we have Kathy Gibbons from the Filter It Through a Brain Cell podcast. Kathy, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm super excited to be here.
I'm excited that you reached out to me. And right before we hit record, you had asked me a question. And I said, you know what, let's just hit record. Because if people haven't listened to my podcast from the beginning, they wouldn't know the story either. So go ahead. I'll let you ask it again. And then I'll ask you all the questions.
So I had just asked you, what made you want to start this podcast?
So I have been a government worker for the last 15 years and always kind of felt like I was never really using any sort of creativity or giving anything back to the world at all, right? You're just sitting in a cubicle pushing papers or emails, I guess, around, and it starts to like really weigh on you. I think I like lost a few brain cells doing that. But when COVID hit and our son was in daycare, he turned 3 and the daycare started masking 3-year-olds. And my husband and I said, well, we don't want that. Oof. And it was not even up to us. And it was just this feeling of, who are these people in the government telling us what will we put on our child's face? It felt so like out of control, you know? Like, it felt like I had no control over my child's life. And if I'm sure that is not the only place that was going to happen in the government-run education system. Okay, so I started looking into homeschool groups, but I always had this kind of theory like, well, I don't sew my own clothes. I typically, they're very Christian. And, you know, although we are Christian, it's something I would like to get into more, but it's not like we, you know, that weighs heavy on our everyday. So I just felt like I didn't know if homeschooling was even a space that I could be in. Could I do this? Can I even handle being with my kids all day long? So I started going to play groups and asking people questions about how they homeschool. And I did that for about a year. And one day I said, why don't I put this in a podcast? Because if I want to know this information, other people want to too. And what I realized very quickly was that you don't have to sew your own clothes. You can have religion or spirituality or none or all of it, in any amount in your homeschooling day. Right. And that's perfectly okay. And if you're annoyed with your kids, you're the teacher at that government school, they're going to find them annoying too. So who do you want yelling at your kid? You or some stranger? And in that process, make kids that don't annoy people. Like, that's part of our job.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
So it kind of just went from there, and I got some good feedback. And, I'm still learning things because I don't know much about the whole Instagram world or how people actually make money from it. But it's been fun and I've been learning a lot. So I've just stuck with it. So
yeah.
How did you get into homeschooling? Because you've been doing it for 11 years now, correct?
Oh, yeah. We're in our 12th year of homeschooling. We just have one daughter. My husband always jokes and says we're the homeschool starter family kit because, you know, so many homeschool families have a lot of kids and we just have one. But so we have one daughter. She is in 11th grade. We have homeschooled her from the beginning. I always say, though, every mom, if you're a mom, you're a homeschooling mom because you are teaching your kids so much. Like, there's so much that we teach our kids on a daily basis. Right. So I believe every mom, every parent is a homeschooling parent, regardless of whether they're officially doing it or not. But for us, my husband and I, he's got a background. He was in the Army. He's a military guy, veteran now. And we were business owners. We've been business owners for 26 years. And we knew when I had my daughter, we knew that we wanted to give her a different kind of education. I went to a private school, so I had a good education, but having been in the entrepreneur world, we just started to see things differently, you know, and we realized, okay, the education that we got isn't necessarily the education that works for the world today. And so that was one. We knew we wanted to teach her differently. Number two, we wanted to be the one to teach her our values and our beliefs and the things that we felt were important, not some state school or not somebody else giving them their values and what they believe. And number three, there was just things outside a typical curriculum that we felt were important that we wanted her to learn. And in my family, I come from a big family, and although none of us were homeschooled, there's several of my siblings have homeschooled their kids. And so I saw them and I watched them and I was like, oh, we can so do this. But the number one reason that we homeschooled was because we knew we wanted to teach our daughter how to think. Because in a typical education, it's all about what to think, right? We're told here's the textbook, you read it, and the good students are the ones who can remember long enough to put it down on a test, and they do well, and everybody else is a bad student, and you know, just that whole mess. And I knew at that time, we have to teach our daughter how to think. Yes, yeah, she's going to learn some of the what to think, because that's just part of education. But she also has to have the skill of how to think. And so that's how we got started homeschooling. We have loved it. It has been so good for our family. And then it's so interesting, your origin story of how you started your podcast. COVID is actually how I started my podcast as well. So my daughter, because this kind of goes in with what we were saying, when she was in the seventh grade, the 2019-2020 school year. And when everything happened, right, all the craziness happened. And it just so happened that one of the books, she's part of a homeschool group where we meet once a week, right? So she's got this little class of like 10-ish kids. So once a week, she's together with them. And I was the one who was directing their group. And so one of the books that we were reading was called The Fallacy Detective. And it was all on logical fallacies. And it was so interesting watching these kids. Number one, I had never heard of logical fallacies. I didn't get this as part of my education. So no. I was like, oh, this is awesome. And number two, the kids were like, this is awesome. And they were having so much fun with it. Well, then the pandemic hit. And the thing that stood out to me so much was watching these kids who had only had, they had only learned maybe 30 of the fallacies. There's a lot more than that, but they had learned 30. And just even with that little foundation and just a few simple tools of how to think, they went through the pandemic so differently than their peers that I observed who maybe were in public school or didn't have that same kind of training. Like, you try watching a presidential debate with a bunch of kids who can recognize logical fallacies. It is hilarious. And I thought they saw through all the programming of the pandemic. They saw through all the stuff with the political, you know, in the political world. And I thought, oh my goodness, if everybody just knew these super simple skills of how to think and how to recognize bad thinking when they see it, our country would not be in the place that we're in right now, because everybody would be able to say, well, that's just wrong. No, that's dumb. That doesn't even make sense, right? Just like these seventh graders were saying. And so I thought, okay, I have to do something, right? As we continued to watch everything devolve and the craziness continue to happen and people fall for it and not be able to recognize it and think about what the messages that they're seeing, I said, well, I can start a podcast. So I started the Filter Through Brain Cell podcast. I do short little episodes. All of them are pretty much under 10 minutes long, because my whole goal was for it to be a resource that parents could play in the car when they're running to soccer, taking their kids to school, running, like, we spend a ton of time with our kids in the car, right? Especially as they get into these middle and high school years. And so I wanted a quick resource that both the parents and the kids could listen to, that they could easily understand, and now they can have a conversation about it. And so that's how I started it. I think it's been about a year and a half, maybe going on 2 years now. And I love it. It's been fantastic.
Oh, that is so cool. Give me the name of that book again. The Fallacy Detectives, is it?
The Fallacy Detective. Yep, that's the name.
Okay. I'm going to link that in the episode description too. So for any parent that wants to check it out and do that with their kids. And then that kind of goes into a video of yours that I saw this morning on your page about propaganda and how it's funny too, because as I was thinking about, I think about it a lot, the words that they use, things like propaganda or narrative, it's like you hear it enough, you don't really think about it because it doesn't actually describe, like, it's not an everyday word that you would use outside of that context. So I don't know that people even grasp what that means. Like, the narrative. I mean, when do you hear narrative? Like, when you're in third grade reading and you're talking about, like, the narrator and the what's the narrative of the book? It's like, no, it's a story. It's a story. And some are true and some are not and some are half true and some are to get you to think a certain way, but it's a story. And a lot of stories are made up. Like, authors make a living off of that. So we, you know, when we throw around this, well, what's the narrative? And don't listen to the narrative, or you should listen to the narrative. It's like, let's get down to the basics. What's the story the news is telling us today? Why do they want us to feel that way? Who has the money? Yes. Who would benefit from us feeling that way? And who has the money to back that and make that happen? And the same thing with the propaganda. It sounds like this word that, like, you think of, I think of World War II, you know, and the propaganda from Nazi Germany to make you think this. But it's like, it's even cigarette commercials from the 50s, 60s, 70s. Like, that's propaganda to get you to buy something to propaganda. Hey, this doctor suggests Marlboros. That's propaganda because they didn't ask every doctor. So yeah, that's that one guy that was paid to tell you that and paid by Marlboro. And so it's like we even have to teach our kids. Let's break down that word. What does that word mean to you? And even propaganda, like, what would it be? It would be like marketing or, you know, but also lies. It could be lies. It's so crazy
absolutely
how much is involved and we don't. I was never trained to think. Let's break it down to the bare basics. And a lot of times people are just afraid to ask.
Yes, you nailed it. So I always like to break it down. So when it comes to critical thinking, there's three different things that we kind of have to be aware of. So number one is our fallacies or logical fallacies. And all a logical fallacy is, a fallacy is an error. So a logical fallacy is an error in thinking. And I got introduced to about 30 of them in that book, The Fallacy Detective. Would you believe there's over 300 of them named ways that we can make mistakes and errors in our thinking? It's kind of crazy and it kind of blew my mind. So logical fallacies, then we have propaganda. And the definition that I always just like to use for propaganda is different tactics that are used to manipulate people mentally and emotionally. Right. And yes, World War II, that's one of my favorite periods of time to study and to talk about. So I talk about it a lot. But propaganda is used by almost every single government, including our own. Right. It happens a lot. It's used in advertising. It's used in marketing. It's used in all kinds of stuff. And right now I'm actually in a mini series on different propaganda tactics because I feel like you need to know. You need to be able to recognize them. And then lastly is a cognitive bias, or you might hear it called a mental bias, which is just a limitation in your ability to think objectively. And everybody likes, you know, we like to have this narrative of this, there you go, narrative, this story of, well, you shouldn't have any biases. Well, the thing about it is, it's almost impossible to not have a bias because a bias is just how you see the world. Now, there are some that are just built in. For instance, I'm a woman, I'm a wife, I'm a mom, right? These things, I will never not be able to see the world through those lenses, right? Of being those things, among many others. So there's some that are always going to be with us and that, you know, that are just part of who we are. But then there's also some that we have to be very aware of what our biases are and what other people's biases are. And some we might have to change. Some we just need awareness around. And some we really have to watch out for because there are people who are trying to pass their biases onto us. So it's really interesting. The ways that the human mind can be manipulated is super fascinating to me. And there is no shortage of people out there trying to do exactly that, which is why we have to be able to recognize it. And goodness knows, I have a heart for this next generation that is coming up in the midst of all this. And I'm like, we have got to equip them with tools so that they can recognize this, so that they can see through all the ridiculousness. Because pretty soon, you know, we've seen it in our lifetime where it seems like the ridiculous level has been slowly rising to the common sense level. And I think it's passing now to where we've got more ridiculousness than we have common sense. And my heart truly is to equip this next generation to have some discernment and to be able to recognize that.
Yes. And that is so hard to do just because it seems like a mountain that you have to climb over. Like when you think of, okay, how can I break this down for my child? And then what's appropriate for a child? For instance, this is, yeah. I don't know if this has much to do with it, but okay, there was this past weekend, a missing 9-year-old girl in our area. Okay. She just went vanished from a state park. I don't know if that made like news out. You said you're in Colorado. Amber alerts going off. Okay. So in the co-op that we're at, the pastor had said, you know, last week to the kids, you know, what does God want you to do? He wants you to do the right thing. And what is the right thing? And the kid says, helping others. And yeah, that's it. So I said to my son, now her bike was left there on the kickstand. So she got up and wandered off, meaning someone lured her over. You know, she wasn't like violently taken because they wouldn't go back and put the bike up on the kickstand. So I said to my son, who's 5, what would you do if a stranger asked you to help them find their dog who was lost? And now he had just been at the co-op and knows that helping people is the right thing to do. He said, I would help. And me and my husband are, no! This poor child. He's like, what? The pastor just told me to help. I thought that's the right thing to do. That's what God wants. And we're like, no, that is a propaganda or a lie. Because, and thinking logically, an adult's never going to ask a child to help find a missing animal. Right. Because one, that's been a tactic used before. So if some adult had a child or had a dog missing, they know that sounds like a pedophile, you know, child abductor line. And they don't want that stigma if they're not really there to do that. But secondly, what help is a 4-year-old going to be, your 5-year-old going to be in finding your dog, right? You're just going to get that child lost. So it's giving your child, even at 4, 5, 3 years old, these critical thinking skills of, we got to think through that. An adult's never going to ask you to do that. So there, you know, spoiler alert, they did find the little girl. Thank God she's okay. 2 days later, they found her. She was kidnapped, but it was this whole big weird thing with a ransom note. And I don't know, but she was found. That is all that matters. But it's like, there's no age that's too young to start teaching these propaganda lies, you know, or ways to manipulate your thinking. Even though we feel that that should probably be later in life, especially with what's going on in the world, like the debates and all that. It's like, how do you decide what to expose your daughter to and at what age, what things are appropriate?
Oh, that is a good question, because I feel like, you know, raising a daughter in today's world, I feel like I have had to expose her to things earlier than I would like to, earlier than I probably had to have it. One of the things that I was told one time by a mentor that I thought was really useful is the whole, I'm going to call it the law of first mention. And it's one of the things that we do for our kids as parents is we create little files in their brains, files for the world around them, for how to think about things, for how to see things. And the law of the first mention is that the first person to create that file in your kid kind of gets to be the first one to define it. Not that it's stuck that way, not that it can never change, but that we as a parent, we want to be the first one to create that file about whatever the thing is. We want to be the first one to create the file about strangers. We want to be the first one to create a file about sex. We want to be the first one to create a file about, right, all these things that they're going to see in the world. And so for me, it's just a matter of, you know, when they're younger, it's all about age appropriateness, right? So when they're younger, just keeping it very factual, very short. They just need, you know, giving them the answers that they need so that they're like, oh, that's page one in my file. And when they're 5, that's all they need, page one. They don't need the rest of the book. They don't need the whys. They don't need a whole bunch of other stuff. They just need page one. Or maybe it's a sticky note in their little file for that. And so, and then as they go, maybe you're going to put page 2, or maybe you expand it and you do the first chapter, right? And so for me, that just kind of helped. Like, we're going to be visiting these things over and over and over again throughout the time that they are in our house. And each time we do it, we're adding another page to the file. But I want to be sure that I'm the first one to create that file. I want to be page one for whatever the file is, so that whenever anything else that they hear, they're always going to go back and compare it to page one of the file that we put in there. And so that's just kind of how I've thought about it. So that way, as things come up, I'm like, okay, well, we need to just say something about this at least, and let's do page one in their file. And so that just helped me to be able to be age appropriate and to address it and just let them know, we're not afraid to talk about this. We're going to talk about it, and we're a safe place to do it. And I think if you can do that, that's one of the most important things you can do for your kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's hard, especially with elections going on and what you let your kids in. I mean, I'm personally of the, I went from the bleeding heart liberal to the, we have to fight for our country with the Conservative Party, to now like, oh my goodness, they're both evil and they're playing us. They're opposite wings to the same bird. And they just give us this foolishness to fight about, like, it was a laptop, it's a spy balloon. I mean, like, weird things that were, you know, to distract us so that they can, you know, funnel money into different accounts and basically keep us as slaves, you know, to do their bidding. And that's a hard concept to kind of like introduce your child to as well. You obviously want them to have a bleeding heart, as we all do, but to see through the propaganda. And then you go, you know, it's hard for me as an adult. It was very hard to stand, you know, kind of let people know that my ground had changed. And, you know, now, oh my goodness, she must be a, all the names that, you know, the one side calls the other. And then to realize, oh, I've been kind of abandoned by both, and my government, you know, maybe I cannot trust them. So what I've started to tell people and to work on myself is, how can we as a family just better ourselves and make our quality of life better? So for me, that's been, okay, let's think about what you do in a job. If you spend 30 years in a cubicle where you're not doing anything creative, and someone else that you didn't even choose is raising your children for 8+ hours a day, like, are you going to be happy on your deathbed? And if the foods we're giving our kid, well, if you're giving them McDonald's and whatnot, and they're drinking soda and they're never getting outside to be in nature, and, you know, you're missing all these bonding experiences with them, like, are you going to be happy on your deathbed? So what can we do? Can we get chickens? Can we, you know, slowly grow that and homeschool? So it's been like a very, my husband's like, who the hell are you? He's like, you are not the girl that I met on Match.com 10 years ago, but I think he's happier now. But it is, it's just a really crazy world, and it's very hard to raise kids in it. So what are the things that you focus on for your daughter's homeschooling? Like, what are the things other than how would you even teach her how to find discernment in different things that you see? And what do you really want her to be able to do by the time she graduates and can leave your home?
Okay, that is a fantastic question. I love that. So I always tell this story about, so it's a couple things. So number one, they need the grammar, right? They need to just know the language of good thinking, the language of I would just call it fallacies, because we've done both informal logic, which is the fallacies, and formal logic. So it's a little bit different. And so she studied both of them. But if you just give the kid the language and let them be able to recognize the good thinking and the bad thinking, they pick it up super fast because they love it. It's fun. They love nothing more than to catch their parents committing a logic. Mommy, that's a red herring, right? It's a fantastic fun for them. And they get it, I think, faster than adults. So number one is just giving them the language. So teaching them, this is what it's called. This is what it looks like. Here's how to recognize it. Here's what's wrong with it. And then number two, one of the things that my dad used to do that we hated, me and my siblings hated this. It was so annoying. Is he used to do what we called narrate life for us. So as we were watching movies, he would make little comments about what he thinks about the person and what they're doing and the situation. And we would always be like, oh, Dad, stop. Can we just watch the movie? Or if we would be out and about, he would just make little comments about what was going on around us and what people were doing and that kind of thing. And so annoying when we were teenagers. But now as a parent, I'm like, it was brilliant, because what he was doing is he was downloading to us his worldview, a way of seeing the world, a way of interpreting what's going on around us. And so it enabled us to be able to now not just take what we're being given, but to think about it, because he would always have a slightly different viewpoint or a majorly different viewpoint than whatever was being presented. And so what it did is it just kind of trained us that there's more than one way of thinking out there, and that a lot of times what we're being shown is not right at all, as you know, as you've been saying. And then number three, the big thing that I like to teach is you have to practice on real life stuff. So with my daughter, it's so funny because if I'm scrolling, like, you know, social media, it has no shortage of bad thinking and bad reasoning and memes and all kinds of stuff. And so, and she's not on social media yet. And so what I'll do is I'm scrolling and I see something, I'll either screenshot it and send it to her, or I'll show her on my cell phone. I'll say, hey, read this. What do you think of this? And so I take real life stuff that we are getting, the messaging that we are getting on a regular basis, and we have conversation about it. And I make her think about it. I make her tell me, is there something wrong with it? Is there a thinking error here? If so, what is it? What is the truth? Right? And so I have conversations with her about this, because I feel like we have to train them for real life, for the stuff that they're going to see in their social media feed, for the stuff that they're going to hear, you know, on movies and podcasts and whatever, depending on what they're listening to. We have to prepare them with real life stuff and age appropriate, obviously, of course. My daughter's a teenager now. She's a junior in high school. She's 16. There's not much that she can't handle that we haven't already had conversations about and that she's not ready for. And it's crazy because these kids, when they learn it, they pick it up super fast. And it gives me hope. I'm like, okay, this next generation, there is hope that they will not get swept up in all this nonsense.
And is the language and stuff, the red herring, is that all from the book, The Fallacy Detective? Or is there other sort of curriculum or stuff that you've used to teach and talk about this with her?
So The Fallacy Detective is the main thing that we learned. That was the book that we read. There's other curriculums that are out there. And that's also why I did the podcast. I'm on episode, I don't know, coming up on 200 episodes now. So I just, wow. Each episode has a different fallacy. And so it's just super easy to listen to, and you learn it and you get it. Oh, but there's a couple other curriculums that are out there that also teach logical fallacies. If you want a workbook, I'm not a fan of workbook. I'll be very honest. I'm not a workbook homeschool mom. I hate them. I think they're a waste of time. I don't think workbooks are true learning. So I am kind of anti that. But there are some that are out there as well. If somebody's looking for a workbook, if that's something that works really well with your child, you can absolutely find them.
And then, so if somebody wanted to go through your podcast, where would they find that? And I'm not ending it now. We'll say it again at the end, but before I forget, where would they find your podcast?
Yeah, Filter Through Brain Cell is on almost every single podcast player. So just search for it wherever you like to listen to podcasts. You should be able to find it. And I recommend you start at episode one. It is designed to go in sequential order because I review often. So that way you're hearing them more than one time just to kind of get it in. But yeah, anywhere you like to listen to podcasts. Or if you just want to go to my website, you can play it on the website. I don't think that's as user friendly as listening to a podcast player, but it's there too.
Okay. And so your Instagram, you kind of just break down little bits and have little videos, but there is an actual podcast along with it.
Oh, yes. Yep. The podcast is the main place that I teach all the thinking stuff. Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. So you said that you're not a fan of workbooks. Can you kind of tell us, and this is separately, this is just you as homeschool mom to your daughter.
Yeah.
How do you teach her then when you're not using it? Because with me starting out, I've got the 5-year-old and 1-year-old. So there's the curriculums that we use, the Good and the Beautiful math and the All About Reading. And we do an extra phonics one. But like, because I don't, and that's why I started the podcast too. Like, what are all the ways that people homeschool? How would we do that without any sort of workbook activity?
Yeah, no, and I say that is something that I grew into over time because I feel like that's where we all start because we think that's what we did in school. And so we think that's what learning is. And so for me, I really had to start on the journey of what is learning, right? What is learning? What does it mean to learn? How does one learn? And this, I had a lot of undoing that I had to do in my brain of what learning truly was, because we think we equate learning to schooling. They're not the same thing. Those are two totally different things. Schooling is supposed to be a method where you get learning, but is schooling the only place learning happens? No, of course not. Look how much kids learn before they ever formally enter school. And I think we as adults could say we learn just as much from the world outside of school as we ever did in school. And so I started having to grapple with this whole thing of, okay, well, what is learning? And there's different styles of learning. And, you know, and is workbook learning the best way of doing it? And what I started to see just with my daughter and my own observations is, and there's things that we still do that are workbook. Math, I just don't know if there's any way to get away from that. I was doing for a while Life of Fred math with her, which I adored. I loved it's math through stories, and I thought it was so fantastic. But as she got older, she didn't like it. She thought it was too babyish. I thought it was amazing. I would have continued doing it if she would have let me do it. And it was a very anti-workbook type of math, which is one of the things that drew me to it. But the math we do now, it's more workbook, whatever. But I just felt like learning is so much more than just filling in the blank. And is that a true representation that they've actually learned something, right? Because I was the kind of kid in school, I did very well in school because I could fill in the blanks, I could test well, I could remember and then dump it all after the test. But did I actually learn? You would think, yeah, you learned a lot because you were an A student. Maybe. What's learning, right? What is my ultimate goal of this education? And when you start to ask questions like that, the methods that you get there change considerably. So for me, what it changed a lot more to is we did a lot more reading and I did a lot more verbal back and forth, because I thought, if she can tell me in her own words, she has it. I don't care if she can fill out the stupid worksheet. That doesn't mean anything to me. I want to have conversation with her. So we shifted a lot to just verbal back and forth. So we would read books and we would talk about them, read books and talk about them, read books and talk about them. If I could boil it down to any one thing, that would be where we started.
Hi folks, I just wanted to jump in and say that I hope you all have a great holiday season, no matter what you are celebrating. I hope that you are celebrating with family and friends, and may your year ahead be filled with peace, joy, and filled with a happy home. Thank you so much for listening to the Homeschool How To podcast. We are coming up on 1 year this February. It has been an amazing year, and I owe it all to you guys, because if I didn't have any listeners, there'd be no reason to keep going. So thank you so much. I'm learning so much right along with you. I have t-shirts and sweatshirts available at thehomeschoolhowto.com, and you can just click over to shop. And I made some really cool t-shirts and sweatshirts that say, "Be the role model your government fears." What better holiday message than that? Thank you so much. I hope you all have a great time with your families.
People are always surprised. Up until the sixth grade, up through sixth grade, I don't think we ever did more than an hour or two of school a day, ever. Because why? There's so much. If you think about spending 7 to 8 hours a day at a school and how much wasted time there is, I'm like, I'm not doing that at home. And I realized, because I kind of experimented with this a little bit with my daughter, I realized we could get done everything we need to get done in about 45 minutes, quite frankly. And then the rest was conversations that we would just have as we were living our life. I'd play CDs in the car, right? And she would learn that way. We'd talk about things. And so for me, the big change was when I realized homeschooling is not doing school at home. Homeschooling is a lifestyle. And when you realize that you're learning everywhere and you can incorporate learning into everything, to me, that changes it all. I think we all start off with let me set up a little homeschooling corner in my house, and there's a desk, and I created a cute little school room. Well, that lasted about 3 months in my house. And I was like, this is the dumbest waste of time. She never wants to sit at this desk. We don't like being in this room. Homeschooling for us always happened on the couch. And now that she's older, she just does it in her room, right? And so we had to get out of this schooling mindset and just realize that learning happens as we live life. And To me, that's a huge game changer, and it frees the kids. Like, cut them loose from the worksheets. There might be some that you're going to do. You might keep some. Like, for math, we still have that. But that's the only thing that she does that's worksheets. Now, not that we don't read books. We're all about books. But I want good books, not necessarily just, you know, to me, worksheets are glorified tests. Who likes to be tested every day, all day? No. I don't want to. In fact, we don't even test. I have never given my daughter a test. We do assessments. I talk and I know where she's at. I know what she's good at. I know where she struggles, you know, except for, you know, the college type tests that she's going to have to do. I have zero interest in giving her tests at the end of the chapter because to me, that doesn't indicate learning.
That's very true. I think a lot of times we want to give tests because we want to see if we're doing a good job as the teacher. Did you learn anything? Oh, I must have done a good job then teaching you. And it's like, take your ego and check it at the door. Did you bond? Did you have fun? And I say that even though I have like screaming matches with my five-year-old because I'm like, he's like, why are you yelling? I go, because you don't listen when I talk in a regular voice. But and so breaking it down, even the all about reading, like it's a two books and a couple of like books that you read through that you get as part of the pre-reading curriculum, but we are doing activities within them. He's not actually filling out worksheets. So I guess that is like, it's hard to conceptualize what's the workbook and what's the different types. But when I'll read him a couple of the poems right now because we're on the lowercase letters and ask him to go point out a lowercase M if that's what we're working on that day and ask him about, oh, what does moon start with? What sound? What letter makes that sound? And read him the poems and then do a worksheet, but it's just coloring. You know, the back of it says you can do, you know, the moon in yellow or whatever, but I just let him color whatever. So it's, you know, it's nice that he's trying to work with the hands there doing that. And then there's always an activity. This one has a puppet that, you know, he loves when the puppet comes out. So today it was, oh, I'm going on a trip. Can you put all of the items that start with an M? Actually, it was that start with a T. And I'm like, how, if the person that wrote this curriculum is that smart, why wouldn't he be putting the items that start with the letter that we're doing that day in the backpack? But anyway, they wanted the letter that starts with T items to go into the backpacks, you know, so that it was moving around. So I guess even though it looks like a workbook that you're getting, you're doing different stuff. You're not actually doing worksheets, which should also be explained to people just starting out. There are different types of curriculum. And that, again, that was another reason I started the podcast was like, okay, there's so many different curriculums out there. And then there's people that don't use any, that just do the unschooling approach, which like yesterday when we were driving to his little bike group, I had the GPS up and I was asking him, you know, it says that there's how many minutes left until we get there. And so he'd say 20. Okay, what's one less than 20? Because that'll be how many minutes is next. And so he was trying to work on thinking of what comes one less than 20. So like little things like that we don't really think of. We're so programmed to turn on the radio or put on their iPad in the car. But like you said, playing your podcast are these fun little things we can do to spark conversation with each other. And then he's not looking at his iPad. He's looking ahead. And then you can say, oh, look, there's that airplane. Or, well, the moon's out right now. Why do you think the moon is out right now? It's daytime. You know, what would make that happen? And then that could spark something later where you get home and you research, if the moon's out here, why isn't it? Like, can China see it? You know, that was my question to him. You're right. And I just think that feels so overwhelming to a brand new homeschooling parent to just don't use curriculum, just go with your day, because it's like, well, what if I fall short and then they don't? But you mentioned earlier, what are your goals for your child when they graduate? And so I think it's making that environment in your house all day long. But even that can get stressful too, because then you feel like everything you do, you have to be like teaching them. How do you find the balance between like, okay, I just want to make dinner because we need food on the table tonight and we have to bring my daughter in because this is part of your schooling approach, you know? Where do you find the balance?
I think one of the biggest things now as a homeschooling parent of a high schooler versus where you're at when you're in the early stages, the biggest fear that we hear over and over again is, am I doing enough? Am I doing enough, right? That is the biggest question that at the younger ages, especially new homeschooling moms are asking, and they're beating themselves up about, and they're worried about, and all of these things. And if we can realize that when they're at school, even if they were in a traditional school, they're probably only really getting maybe at most an hour of real teaching instruction a day. The rest is taken up in moving them from here to there and classroom management and, you know, like you said, coloring and doing other little activities that aren't necessarily educational. When we really break it down and see how much instruction is actually happening there, it's not that much. And so the thing I always tell moms, look, if your kid is sixth grade and under, number one, the greatest educational thing that you can do for them is read books to them. I firmly believe if you just read books to your kid, teach them their letters, teach them their, every mom can teach your kid their letters with a pen and a piece of paper. The homeschool organization that we use, it says you should be able to educate your kids with a stick in the sand. And if you think of it like that, you realize how simple education actually is. I think the homeschool world has made things very complicated because there's so many resources that are available. It's so overwhelming. But If you think about, okay, could I graduate my kid with a stick in the sand, right? And some good books. So number one, the real work of childhood is read books to them. Read. Read out loud. Yes, let them read, but you read out loud to them. And I always heard it, if you read out loud to them one level above what they can read, they'll always stay in progression with you. And so that's number one. Number two is just play. Like, kids need to play. Kids need to be kids and they need to play. And so I feel like, and then you put in little opportunities as they come up throughout the course of the day. If you're doing that, I promise you are doing enough, and you are doing probably way more than the kids are getting in school. And because here's the thing, people always worry about, oh, my kid is behind. They're not reading yet. He's six and he's not reading yet. Well, guess what? As soon as he's ready to read, he'll be able to read. You just keep reading to him and it's going to come. There have been years with my daughter that we put away math completely for an entire year. And I know this sounds like, you know, oh, how could you do that? This is terrible. No, because she wasn't ready for it. It was frustrating. We were fighting every single day and I had to choose, what do I value more, her getting through this math book or my relationship with my daughter? And so I was like, I will choose relationship every single day of the week. So we put away the math for, at one point, up to 18 months. We did no formal math at all for 18 months. And when we pulled it back out again, guess what? She picked it up like that because she was mentally and emotionally ready for it. And the thing that people don't realize is you homeschool the kid. You don't homeschool a curriculum. You don't homeschool a grade like we traditionally do. You homeschool your kid. And no kid that I know of is at the same level in every different subject. Like, my daughter is just barely right at grade level in math. But in reading and reading comprehension, last time we had to do the year-end testing thing, she tested at a master's level, right? So What do you do with that? You teach the kid where they're at. You meet them where they're at and you don't stress about it. It's like, you know, when you've got little kids and they're potty training and you're pulling your hair and you're like, are they ever going to be potty trained? And then an older mom comes and says, don't worry, no child has ever gone to college not being potty trained, right? And it helps you to relax, like, so okay, true. They're going to get it. Let me just be patient. It's kind of the same thing with homeschooling. For some kids, it's reading. For some kids, it's math, right? And when you can realize, let me just meet my kid where they're at, and it might not be the same in every different subject, you take so much pressure off yourself. And goodness knows you take pressure off the kid, because who can learn when they're stressed? Right? Who learns well under stress and pressure and feeling like they're behind and feeling like they're failing? And so if we can relieve that from them, oh my goodness, it just changes everything.
Yeah. And to add on to what you were saying about the 1 hour of actually learning in the school setting, I think it's even less that they're actually taking in, because when you take that 1 hour where they're not learning how to stay in line and learning how to raise a hand and, you know, learning if they can have permission to go to the bathroom and learning that that's their time to eat. When you take all that away and you have 20 to 30 kids in a classroom, they're not all paying attention to the teacher. And when she says, what sound does C make? They're not all going, kuh, or what sound? Let me hear my classmates. Oh, it's kuh? Yeah, kuh. They're picking their nose. They're looking out the window. One's throwing a paper or kicking the seat in front of them or taking his shoe off. Or so there's about three kids making the kuh sound. And then all the rest are looking at the one throwing the paper or the tantrum, you know. So when we're one-on-one with them, doing 1 hour one-on-one is like equivalent to doing 8 hours probably in a classroom. I'm just throwing out a number. But, you know, because it's hard for our kid to pay attention just to us one-on-one. So, but we do it. We get through the lessons. You know, I get through, like, what letters rhyme and when he's in La La Land and looking here and looking there, and we've already taken our 10 breaks. I'm like, listen, you have to answer it for me. You can answer wrong, but you have to answer it for me. And then when he says it wrong, well, let's have a conversation about why. They're not getting that in the classroom. So this isn't to say that one's better than another, but just don't feel so much pressure on yourself, because doing that 45 minutes or an hour a day really is a lot more than most other kids are getting. So, and I think the kids in the classroom, they'll get it too. Even with 30 kids, but they're going to get it when they're developmentally ready. And like you said, they're all going to be on different levels. It's crazy to think that just because you 30 kids live in this, you know, radius to this school, and you were all your parents all had you around the same 12-month period, that you're all just supposed to be equivalent in math, science, reading, spelling, everything. It's bizarre. Is what it is.
Yeah. But I 100% agree. And when we can realize that some of the hard work of homeschooling is retraining our own minds as the parent, as the mom, and really thinking through, what is my goal for educating my child and what does this have to look like? Once we can get past that hurdle, the kids are easy. I mean, really. The kids are easy. It's just, we have to just get past it.
Yes. And I think because parents think, and I always did too until I started the podcast, that there are certain things your kid is required to know by the end of each grade level. And what I have quickly found out is, nope, there's not. It does depend on what your goals for your child are. Do you want them in a university? Do you want them to leave your care and go into a university? If they do, then there might be a test or an admission, whatever, that they do need to pass. But think about that. Is that what you want for them, and why? Because I think I was talking to Connor Boyack, the Tuttle Twins author, and he said a lot of homeschooling parents, that is their goal. But you've changed everything about the first 13 years of their life to give them this different opportunity just to funnel them back into a government system. So, you know, it really depends on what you want for them and what they want to do with their lives. So for me, I always felt like I was never given like a list of all the jobs out there to decide what could I do, what could I be? And I still don't know. But I think for my son, my daughter, the best thing I could give them is different experiences and talking to all different people that work in all different kinds of areas and thinking, would I like doing something like that? Could I do something like that, but tweak it a little bit to make it better, make it my own, and then actually make a living off of doing something that I love? And that really would be like just such a gift to a lot of kids. Like my husband loves going to work every day, and I'm like, I've never seen anyone that really likes their job. He really likes it. It exists.
Yep. 100%. And to me, that's one of the beauties of homeschooling, is that you get the opportunity to expose your kids to a whole bunch of other things. This is what I told my daughter. I said, look, you've got 2 years left before you graduate. You need to make a list of things you just want to try, and just try them and see. You want to take a class on welding? Let's take a class and see what you think. You think you're interested in this? Let's find somebody and you can shadow them for the day. Like, we have the freedom and the ability to do this. And in today's day and age, there are so many more options than what I knew about. Like, to me, right, there was probably 10 different professions that you could have after high school. I didn't know, right? Who had any idea? But now there's so much that's out there and so much that's available. And that's the beauty of homeschooling, is you get to know your kid. You get to watch them and know them and see what they're gifted in, see where their strengths are, see where their weaknesses are. And now you can kind of, hey, have you ever thought about this? Have you ever thought about that? You might be really good at this. And there's very few, in my opinion, we are not college pushers in my family. We are like, look, if you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a lawyer, there's going to be some things you're going to have to go get a degree for. But this whole idea of going to college just to go to college is nonsense to me. And this is coming from us. We're business owners. We're entrepreneurs. We've done that for 25 plus years. I'm like, are you kidding me? There are so many people out there who are making a killing and living a great life that never went to college, because you don't need a piece of paper to say that you can do something. And today you can learn almost everything you need to learn online. There's somebody out there who can teach you. They're teaching it. There's classes, there's courses. So I don't think that there's any magic in a piece of paper that says that you've, you know, accomplished, I sat through 4 years of classes, right? I just don't think that there is any. And so again, you have to think about, well, what's my goal here? What do I want? How do I want to live? Who do I want to be? And what do I enjoy doing? How do I want to make a living? And that all of those roads don't always lead through college. And I think it's awesome. I love it that there's so many options that kids have these days, because there's no one way. And I don't know. I did go to a 2-year Bible college, which I really loved, because I felt like that was something that was useful for me for the rest of my life. And then I went to a community college, a state one, and I didn't even make it through the first semester. I took an English class and I was like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever done. These people are dumb. The professor's dumb. Like, it was all just so ridiculous. I thought, this is the biggest waste of my time. I'm out of here. And not once in my life have I regretted that. I went the entrepreneur route. That's what I was designed for and how I was created. And I would not trade it for the world. But I'm so thankful that I didn't have parents who were pushing a certain narrative, a story, right? Saying, oh, this is what you do. You go to school, you get a good degree and get a good job, and one day you'll make it. Like, that doesn't work anymore. No, let's stop feeding our kids that line. And there's a different way to live in today's world.
I'm going to tell you right now, that's the parents I had. Even though neither of them have 4-year degrees, but it was get your degree, and I did. And then it was get a job, you need health insurance, you're going to need a pension. And then it was just get into the government work and looking. And you're told by so many people how lucky you are to have that job, how lucky you are to have health insurance, how lucky you are to have a pension. And once you step back and step out of it, you know, people think I'm crazy for if I leave government work. And it's like, I'm just happy I only lost 15 years because, I mean, so I can work 30 years in a cubicle, just pushing stuff around. You have an idea. Oh, that's a lovely idea, but not today. Like that's literally how it goes every day. You know, things are all bureaucracy. And I've talked to so many homeschooling moms that have completed their, you know, homeschooling their children, and their kids are off doing their own thing. And then they go and start another career for themselves. And it's like it's this beautiful rebirth, and they got those precious times with their kids for that, you know, 18 to 20 years or so. And they made those bonds, and the kids made these bonds with their parents and had these awesome educations. And then mom still goes to do something creative after. And that really is a beautiful way. So everyone that's saying to me, what are you going to do when you want to retire? It's like, well, I don't know. My mom is, she's 76. She works at a car dealership because she's bored at home. She retired 30 years from the state. So it's like, and here she is 22 years still working because she's bored at home. So like what do happily retired people do? I mean, there's only so many gardens you can weed, right? Like you do other stuff. And we got to really, it's been hard for me to pull out of that mindset of, yes, I would leave a pension, or at least, you know, as big of a pension as I could have had. I mean, I could get cancer and never see the pension at all. And then my kids, they didn't get those years with me, you know? So we have to look at it that way too. I saw a really cool meme yesterday that said, the only one that will ever remember you working late is your children. And that's so true, because your boss is never going to remember that you stayed till 8 o'clock four nights a week, most weeks, and your kids are going to be the only ones that remember that. Yeah. As we run up on the hour here, I just want you to think about any final words that you want to talk about and tell people where they can find you in the podcast one more time. And I'll have it all linked in our show's description as well.
Absolutely. So the podcast is just Filter It Through a Brain Cell. You can find that anywhere. That's where you can listen to it. My website is filteritthroughbraincell.com. I do have a free quiz on there. It's a meme fallacy quiz. So if you want to test yourself and see if you can name the fallacies I've got 10 different memes and see if you can name them. That's a fun one. It's filteritthroughbraincell.com/quiz. So you can go there and you can do that. And the last thing that I would just leave with you is the biggest tool that you can use that will scale with you regardless of how old your children are to start them to be able to think well is questions. It's asking good questions. And they're going to look different based on the age of the child. So when they're young and they're five, you're thinking, okay, well, what do you think would happen if you did this? What do you think would happen if you did this? Why do you think it's that way? So just ask them questions to get them thinking about the world around them. And then as they get older, you can scale those questions. And then when they're, the age of, my daughter, okay, why do you think this is happening? Do you think that's true or not? Well, what do you think is right in this situation? How do you know? Right? So it's really learning the skill of asking good questions and then just give them some tools. Like I talked about what's on my podcast of here's some verbiage so that they can have tools. That would be the last thing I would leave with them.
Oh, that is awesome. And I do love that. Yeah. Because we can do it at any age, starting at any age. Just get them thinking about the world around them. That makes a lot of sense. Kathy, it has been such a treat to talk to you today. I could probably converse with you for another 6 hours, but that'd be a lot to edit later, just our delay and all that. But thank you so much for being here. I'm going to check out the website now and take the quiz because my kids aren't here and I should be doing laundry, but I think that would be fun to do. So I hope everybody checks you out as well. And just thank you so much. What a breath of fresh air and fun, thought-provoking conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure. I love it. We love the homeschool community. I love what you're doing. The biggest thing that we tell parents is, look, you can do this. Don't make it harder than it needs to be. The biggest thing, love your kids. If you love, you are the perfect teacher for them. Nobody loves them the way you do. Nobody sees them the way you do. Nobody is going to care for their heart and their soul the way that you do. And so you are the perfect person to teach them. And I just want to encourage you, especially if you're just starting out in your homeschool journey, you got this. Yes, you got this. You can do this. And your kids will be better for it.
I think a lot of parents, including myself, needed to hear that today. So thank you, Kathy.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard and you'd like to contribute to the show, please consider leaving a small tip using the link in my show's description. Or if you'd rather, please use the link in the description to share this podcast with a friend or on your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. Any effort to help us keep the podcast going is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in and for your love of the next generation.